launch of the Garda Mobility app this morning, and KFM will have an exclusive on the launch. We'll be speaking to various personnel there, including Chief Superintendent Sheehan and others in regards to that. And Tim Willoughby, who developed the technology behind it from Garda Síochána, and local Naas Garda Sergeant Brian McLaughlin. Our virtual history tour today is around Johnstown with Brian McCabe. And believe me, when you listen to this and you confront anything pickled ever again, as in pickled food or whatever else, you might not ever eat pickled food again. Also, we'll be hearing from Solus about a new education campaign so that adults and more can avail of further opportunities to upskill and train. Pat Costello will be joining us live from Craddock House Nursing Home on World Alzheimer's Tea Day. And we'll be hearing from Irish Water, who have decided to upgrade the water treatment plant at... where's that on again? At Derren Turin, thanks indeed. All of that, much more, our poem of the day. But first, to the newsroom and Ciarán Noble. All right, Owen. Someone's just turned off my lights. Okay. We just put a hold on that for a minute. Owen, if you're listening to me...
you're in the dark.
Yeah. It's one of those mornings.
Will you turn the lights back on?
Will you turn the lights back on, Ciara, so that I can read my notes?
He's sitting in the dark.
Oh, jeez, we're having one of those days, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Right, but anyway, before I do all the messages and we hear from Sting, Ciara, will you turn the lights back on, please?
Or Dipna, if she's listening.
Or Dipna.
Turn the lights back on in Studio One.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, what's the story on the latest from Fine Gael?
I've been talking to their press department, and we've agreed to have the tarnished up.
Ciara Plunkett, how could you?
Well, we're all about conserving energy here.
I know, yeah. Well, you have the tarnished to leaving us in the dark to fill 20 minutes, yeah. And we had to rattle on, and then you disappear out of Studio
3. And leave you literally in the dark.
And leave Studio 3, yeah, indeed. Thanks very much. You're forgiven. All right, okay.
I was talking to the department there and his press secretary, and we've agreed that the tarnished will come on at 10.15, between 10.15 and 10.20 this morning. They've apologised, they completely understand
how annoyed we were because we didn't book anything into the programme. Look, we understand the tarnished schedule. Now, about 10.15 or thereabouts, okay, they're going to come on.
Yeah.
Are they? Because I have no more meditation left.
No, we'll make sure. Or else we'll just get you to sing a song.
Right, we can't do any more heavy breathing. So I'll go to some of the messages while we're waiting for Ciarán Noble, who'll be coming in live to us in a few minutes as well. Clem, I attended Punchestown yesterday morning for vaccine at 10.30. 10 minutes delay. The staff outside and inside were faultless, out and on the way home at 11.05. Well done all, says Marwan O'Rourke. Right, so there's a different experience of Punchestown. Can you play Always in My Heart? No, I can't at the moment, sorry, because I just don't have time and I have a song Sting lined up. Good man, Clem, you're dead right. Respect works both ways, says Nicola. Good morning, Clem. Do you know something? I put on the TV to silent just to watch the headlines while I'm on my treadmill, but I listen to KFM. I love your show and feeling so grateful to my son who gave me a treadmill. I always wanted one. Sun is shining and what more could you want? I'm so worried about the housing crisis. I'm a mother of six. I worry if it isn't sorted out in the future, people will be forced to emigrate. What does the future hold? Nowhere to rent available, not enough houses available to buy. It's not going to be sorted in the near term, I have to say, unfortunately. Clem, would you mention Alan Wood GA Club's online bingo takes place every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Should have told us yesterday. Today is Thursday. Via Zoom to get your books, please. Go to the Alan Wood GA Facebook page. Okay. And let's go then live to Toker's Restaurant in Newbridge, where I think we're joined by Ciarán Noble.
Yes, Clem, can you hear me?
I can indeed, Ciara. You're coming in loud and clear.
Perfect. Good stuff, Clem. Yes, I'm here at Toker's Restaurant. And at the moment, I am joined by the Assistant Commissioner, Dave Sheehan of the Eastern Region. Dave, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, good stuff. Listen, we're here for the mobility app. Just to start, how does this app work for Gardaí who are on duty?
Well, the biggest contribution we've made in the last couple of years is really providing information to the side of the road with our members. And what we did, working very closely with the members across the country in respect of the last number of years, is to try and give them the real-time information, but more importantly is to be able to access that information and process that information to the side of the road so that they're then able to issue tickets to people for speeding or for no driving licence at the side of the road without the necessity of having to go back to a station.
Okay, so just to rewind, back in the day, as one may put it, you used to have to obviously get in touch with the station to get that information to be able to issue any sort of ticket. So that obviously cuts down on time, meaning that more issues can be dealt with by the force, and they're not as tied up, would say, in the intricacies of obviously sorting things out when it comes to paperwork, etc.
You're going to see inside some of the old ways we did our business before. So you have the paper-based system, which is where what we did for initially. That was in its time, and it was very effective in its time. So what you had to do was literally take the details from the side of the road, go back to the station, write it into a paper-based system, and a ticket there and then, and send it on to Turles. Turles had to put it onto the system in Turles. And then maybe within 3 months' time, you would get notification to say that you got a speeding ticket in Naas today. Whereas now today, for argument's sake, we wheel forward onto today. What happens now is that information is inputted at the side of the road, and when it's inputted at the side of the road, we click send, and it's on the system automatically, and you get your speeding ticket fine within 3 days. And that's the difference. That's the efficiency that has brought about in respect of it. But I think it's bigger than that. I think what it has done as well is that Gardaí now at the side of the road are able to access a lot of information. So if you take last year alone, there was 1,500 people across the country that were taken off the road for being disqualified drivers. Those before possibly wouldn't have been caught by the Gardaí unless we knew. But now, because of the advances of mobility and where mobility has taken us, we have that information at the side of the road. And therefore, those people that are driving now while disqualified are directly cars are actually seized and they are arrested and brought to court straight away.
Now, obviously, one of the things that will first come to people's mind is the cost. But as we know, at the end of last year, October, I believe, Minister McEntee, the Minister for Justice, did allocate €3 billion, the biggest budget allocation in history, to, obviously, the justice sector, yes, including yourselves. How much has this allocation helped you? And kind of break down, if you can, the different areas, I guess, within the force at the moment that this money will be going to, including obviously PPE. We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, well, you must remember in the last year we've gone through a very torturous time in respect of trying to manage COVID and also at the same time trying to keep the lights on and keep the processes rolling out. Yes, we got a fantastic budget last year, but I mean that was based on not just ourselves, but it was government support for the future policing in Ireland, and that and we got a lot of support from government in respect of that and tried to roll out our new operating model, but also trying to move out then a lot of other sub projects within that makes us more efficient and more effective. So from our perspective is that in that period of time, the budget that we got really is welcome. But in that budget, and it allows us to move forward and digitalise the service in order to make us more efficient and more effective, and also to give us greater visibility on the front line, so that instead of having to go back and do paperwork at the station, you can actually finish and complete your work at the side of the road. And that makes an enormous contribution to road safety, and also makes an enormous contribution to the members themselves and being able to be more visible in the community.
Just finally and very briefly, Assistant Commissioner, in terms of recruitment, obviously that money will go towards that as well. And we know here in County Kildare, there are, I think it's about one guard to every 550 people in the county, which is one of the lowest in the whole country. Just how, again, much will this money help in that situation? Because we have one of the biggest populations in this country and such a low number of Gardaí.
Yeah, and that's recognised not only in government, but it's also recognised by ourselves. And it's something we're working towards now in respect of the new operating model, which should allow greater numbers to be allocated to places like that where high densities are. But there's more factors to be taken into consideration than just high densities. There's also crime figures, there's also fatalities on our roads. There's a whole heap of factors that we need to consider when we're allocating people. But that's something the Commissioner is very, very keen to be aware, and he's done a lot of work in respect of that, trying to make sure that there's an equal distribution of Gardaí across the whole country, and that's going to continue going forward. And thankfully for the budget that we got now, that should allow us to do that as well.
Okay, well, Assistant Commissioner Dave Sheehan, thank you very much for talking
to
me.
Thank you very much.
Back to you, Clem.
Thank you, Ciara. Yeah, it's very the Gardaí, it'll be a very efficient thing for the Gardaí, this mobility app, which will allow them just instant information on their phone right at the scene of any incident and to hand out fines on the spot. So be warned about it. The national launch taking place today, and that's Ciara Noble speaking to Assistant Commissioner Sheehan on in regards to that as well. After the break, we'll try again. Tánaiste, Leo Varadkar.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, welcome back to the programme. All through the past week, we've been covering the investment by a vulture fund in the housing estate at Mullen Park in Maynooth. Earlier this week, we spoke with local councillor Angela Feeney and also Social Democrat spokesperson on housing, Cian O'Callaghan. And just before we speak with the Tánaiste, Leo Varadkar, here's what Cian O'Callaghan had to say in Dáil Éireann yesterday in response to the Tánaiste.
When I raised these issues that are affecting renters about international investment funds with the Tánaiste less than 2 weeks ago in this chamber, the Tánaiste said that I was being ideological. Now, I have to ask, is it ideological to think that most people should be able to afford to buy their own home? Is it ideological to think that rents should be set at levels that people can afford? Is it ideological to think that the housing needs of individuals and families should come ahead of the needs of global investment funds? Is it ideological to think that a young child should not be eating her dinner on the side of the street? Is it ideological to think that there is no justification in this day and age whatsoever for a housing system which forces more than 8,000 people into emergency accommodation? Is it ideological to think that renters should not be living in the constant fear of eviction and of losing their home? And if it is ideological to believe that people should have access to the housing and shelter that they and their families need, to rents that are affordable, to secure tenancies, to homes that are affordable to purchase and within reach, then I have to say I wholeheartedly support that ideology.
Tánaiste, Leo Varadkar, you're very welcome to the programme. Thank you for joining us.
First of all, my sincere apologies about earlier on. Entirely my fault and mixed up on my side. And thanks for taking me.
Not at all, Tánaiste. I understand the pressures on schedules in terms of that. So thank you for making room to come on with us this hour. We are juggling things here. And we will have our virtual history item in about 10 or 15 minutes' time at max. Tánaiste, you heard Cian O'Callaghan there, who was with us during the week. This has exercised the imagination and attention of people, particularly here in Kildare, with the huge buy-up of practically 75% of the estate at Mullen Park. This is something that has been going on for a couple of years. You're quoted in the journal.ie as saying, investment funds buying whole estates is undesirable, is the word you used, and the government needs to act. Investment funds buying up whole estates, and according to what you said there, and you continued by saying, and you're quoted at least, we can't see this continuing, you told reporters. The Tánaiste said that what can be done is being discussed at government, specifically by Finance Minister Pascal Donohue and Housing Minister Dara O'Brien. We'll speak about the latter's affordable housing plans in just a moment. Well, what can be done and what are you going to do then to stop this?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, what's happened in Maynooth recently has also happened in my constituency in Hollystown, where an investment fund has bought up an estate that was complete or substantially complete and might have otherwise gone to people looking to buy their first home, people looking to upgrade to a family home, maybe people that live in an apartment and need to move out of an apartment to a house because they have kids now. And that's something that we don't want to see happen, and it's something that we need to deal with. Whether we use tax laws or planning laws to do that, we haven't decided yet, but it's something that we're working on. And you know, nobody wants to see a situation whereby you know, largely completed housing estates are being bought up.
And that's stating the obvious, Tánaiste, yeah. And you say you're working on it, but for example, if I quote from an article by Dr. Rory Hearn, who's a lecturer in social policy at Maynooth, also in the Journal, he says the government does not want you to be able to afford to buy a home. He says the investor takeover of homes is no accident. It's government policy. The public is right to be enraged. And that this policy, you've itemised yourself, it's happened in your particular area, it's happened around the county, but it didn't happen this week or last month, because as Rory Hearn says, the current crisis has been brewing for a long, long time. It goes back even to the Celtic Tiger era, and it goes back to when your own former party leader, Michael Noonan, for very good reasons at the time, I acknowledge, brought in a situation whereby these vulture funds pay no tax on rental income, pay no tax on capital gains when they sell off the estates. But now is now where we are, where the people you've just articulated cannot, young couples, cannot get on the housing ladder, and where local authorities are being basically squeezed by extortionate rent demands from these vulture funds.
Yeah, well, there's a few things there. First of all, they do pay tax. It's the way they're structured is they pay their tax on their dividend income, and that's the tax structure that's used. And we have actually made changes to the tax treatment of investment funds only in the last budget, so it's not that nothing has been done to date, but the effects of that are yet to be seen. It's absolutely the government's belief and commitment to home ownership. We're the people who believe in home ownership more so than anyone else, because we believe in private property, people being able to own their own house, having an asset they can borrow against, having something they can pass on to their kids. And if we didn't believe in home ownership, we wouldn't be doing things like the Rebuilding Ireland Home Loan, for example, helping people get a mortgage when they can't get one from the banks. We wouldn't be doing things like the Help to Buy scheme, you know, helping people to get a deposit by giving some of their income tax back. So we're 100% committed to home ownership. It's the people criticising us who generally aren't.
But all right, when you have the power in your hands, then if you are committed to home ownership to deliver real progress, I'll talk about the affordable home schemes in a moment.
Yeah, but let's talk about these investors.
Why are they allowed in this country to buy up residential apartment blocks and housing estates when this kind of behaviour is banned in countries like Germany?
It's not an outright ban, and you know what I was describing as ideological before was not anything that was said in Kieran O'Callaghan's speech. I noticed he didn't play my clip, he only played his clip, he misrepresented me, and that's the kind of politics that, okay, that Social Democrats...
Well, I just saw that one online, I didn't see your clip.
I know, but you know how politics is played, somebody misrepresents you, then makes a speech criticising something you didn't say. What I think would be a mistake would be an outright ban on investment funds.
Why?
Quite simply because there's a huge number of developments in Ireland, particularly in our cities, particularly apartment developments, that simply would not have happened if it wasn't for the finance that comes from investment funds. They would not have been built, and if they weren't built, we would have fewer apartments, we'd have higher rents, and we'd have more homelessness. And, you know, investment funds make up less than 1%.
And therefore, implicit in what you're saying, therefore, is you're asking vulture funds to pick up what the government should be doing in the first place.
Well, you know, the government never finance the construction of private housing. You know, the government builds social housing, and that's what we do, and we should do, and we're doing more of it all the time. Over 1,000 units built recently in Kildare. It's never been the case that the government, you know, financed the building of private housing. That was traditionally done by the banks. The banks are a shadow of their former selves, and investment funds, to a certain extent, have come in to fill that gap. And I think where they're financing, you know, a new block of apartments or high density development that wouldn't have been built otherwise, that's one thing. But when they come in and buy, you know, a whole estate that was already finished or substantially finished, like they did in Maynooth or like they did in Hollystown, that's a very different thing.
And when they buy those estates at prices way above what the normal market would dictate, then the local authorities are in a position where these vulture funds are leasing these houses at excessive rents back to local authorities, who are using taxpayer monies to put more profit in these vulture funds' pockets, who then can sell it and not incur any capital gains tax down the line, and will own the development ultimately at the end of any social housing lease to local authorities.
I think where it's not working is where they do something like that. As you say, they come in, buy a whole estate or a large part of the estate they have in Kildare and Hollystown, and as a result of that actually drive up prices. What works is when they come in and they finance a development that would otherwise not have been financed. And we have seen a lot of that in Dublin. A lot of the new, well-run apartment developments have been financed by investment funds. And if they hadn't been there, they wouldn't have been built. There would have been less housing. And as a result of that, other people would have faced higher rents and higher prices.
So you're saying you're looking at it. So, for example, can I suggest in what way you're looking at it, Tánaiste? Are you looking at it in terms of, for example, like in Germany, these vulture funds are not allowed to buy up residential areas? is, as I understand it, they're confined to buying up commercial property in that. Are we looking at something like that here?
Yeah, I don't know the exact law in Germany, but I understand it's not a blanket ban by any means on investment. I think if you ban private investment in housing, if you clamp down on private developers, you're tying one hand behind your back.
What do you think he'll do?
Well, that's what we're going to have to come up with as a solution now in the near future, and it might be based on planning and development law, and that would prevent the sale of certain developments to investors.
Are we talking about a 30% bottom line of housing has to be reserved in any new development for first-time buyers?
You could do that, and that's an idea that Darragh O'Brien put forward when he was in opposition. But you know, any time, and this is something that you know I've learned from experience, any time we as politicians interfere in the housing market or the property market, sometimes with the best intentions, we actually make things worse.
All right, so how imminent is any reform? Because people are out there, as we saw on prime time, as we have had on this programme, they're crying out to try and get on the property ladder, young couples. They haven't a hope.
I'd say in a matter of weeks, we'll have a solution to this. But you know, just that 30% idea, and it's a classic example of something that could be a good idea, but it needs to be thought through. Like, what if, for example, that estate was built in an area where there wasn't a high demand for first-time housing, or it was a type of development that you know wasn't affordable for first-time buyers? By imposing that law, you might make it unviable to build it in the first place. So you know, we always have to think through these things.
Matter of weeks, you say. We'll see about the hostages to fortune on that. You mentioned Darragh O'Brien and the bill he brought in a couple of years ago.
We did change the tax treatment of investment funds in the budget.
All right. You mentioned Darragh O'Brien. He's now housing minister. You're in a coalition government. Maybe if you weren't in a coalition government, there might be laughter emanating from the Fine Gael benches at the idea that a housing minister who introduced a bill to deal with the housing crisis a couple of years ago when in opposition is now on the other side. The poacher has become gamekeeper, is now on the other side and could eminently be opposing a bill, the ideas of which he originally brought in. You'd be laughing at that if you were in opposition, would you not?
Not really.
You would.
You've been analysing and following politics for a long time. You know as well as I do that when people are in opposition, it's the norm for the opposition to put forward, you know, simple solutions or solutions that, if you like, the silver bullet solutions. I guarantee you all of the people now in opposition are putting forward solutions now that if they were actually in government, they would struggle to.
All right, let's look at his current solution. It has drawn a lot of criticism. Among the criticism, aside from politicians and the political games that are at play that you talked about earlier, the ESRI, the central bank, have all expressed concern. I mean, the government's new shared equity scheme under affordable housing proposes a price cap of €500,000 on apartments and 450,000 on houses within the Dublin area, and if you like, down to 225,000 for counties, we'd say, away from the greater Dublin commuter area. How are first-time buyers ever going to be able to avail of this sort of stuff?
Well, you know, that's at the extreme end of the bans, and it's a cap. Cap is the maximum, it's not the average or the norm, and, you know, the average house in Ireland sold last year, for about 270,000. So, you know, affordable is in that space or less, in my mind. But there are parts of the country where property is very expensive and we want to have some developments there. But, you know, shared equity isn't new. We did have it before. Had it in Fingal County Council when I was a councillor on it. And it did help a lot of people who, you know, were renting, who couldn't afford a mortgage to buy their first home. And they essentially bought 75% of the house. The council bought the other 25%. That allowed them to pay a lower mortgage, one that they couldn't afford. And then over time, as they got better jobs and their incomes rose, they were able to buy the council out. So, you know, this is something that has been done before. It can work. I don't think it's the solution to the problem on its own by any means. The solution is supply. And we need to build about 30,000 new homes every year. It's going to be about 15,000 this year. And that's largely because construction was stopped for so much of the year because of the pandemic. And that's really, really unfortunate because we were getting there. We had got up to 20,000 a year back in 2019. Would have been 25,000 in 2020. Would have been 30,000 this year had it not been for the pandemic. But that knocked out so much of construction for so long that we're now back in catch-up. But that's the main thing, you know, that's going to solve the housing problem, in my view. You know, if there was enough supply, we wouldn't have this issue of people competing for limited housing. There would be enough for people to buy, whether they wanted to rent or whether they wanted an investment property or whether they wanted to buy their own home.
But, well, the government talking, or the minister's plan, you know, he's talking about 5,000 houses over the next 4 years. It'll hardly put much of a dent in it, but I understand the constraints in the market, and I understand your constraints of time and ours as well in terms of this. So very briefly, if you would, Tánaiste, in terms of COVID and the whole vaccine rollout, we all understand it's subject to supply issues and that. I think, did I see somewhere you're saying that we could be back into more generalised normal activity and normal societal activities and movements within the next 2 months even?
Yeah, I think so. Like, people will know the plan for May, and in June there's further restrictions eased as well. For example, outdoor dining and outdoor drinking being allowed, and I think our sites in June and then in July, I think we'll allow some indoor activities too. So, you know, all things going to plan, I think that life could start to look a little bit like normal in August, and schools, colleges, offices going back in September. But that is, of course, heavily caveated on the vaccine programme continuing to go well, and it is going well now. Over 200,000 vaccines being given a week. We'll probably get up to 250,000 this week or next. The numbers of people in hospital falling. So I do think we're on the right track, but I have to caveat that with all the usual warnings that, you know, we just don't know what might go wrong. But
we're on the right track indeed, Tánaiste, and I know this is all subject to hostages to fortune and everything else, and we've heard warnings even on the news service this morning about the possibility of a fourth wave if things get out of hand. We've seen countries like India, where at one stage they had reduced it to absolutely low levels, and now they're in the throes of 300,000, 400,000 plus cases a day. So the danger always is, unless people comply here, that it would happen. And activity in Longford yesterday evening, which I'm sure you're aware of, doesn't give much assurance to people, when it seems one section of the community can basically give two fingers to the law.
Well, if I read what I read about that correctly, the Gardaí took action, and the council took action to make sure that that particular wedding party didn't go ahead.
But a large number of people stayed there on the scene overnight in the marquee and whatever else, and continued. But it's the response that some people here to this programme make. We've had encampments on the Curra and everything else, and you know, and I know, if you park your car in a double yellow line, you get your fine. But it seems that there's different ways of as to how the law is applied to certain sections of the traveller community.
Well, you know, no matter what community you come from, I think that the Gardaí need to enforce the law, and I think that we all need to listen to the public health advice and obey the restrictions. And, you know, I don't know the details of what happened in the Curra, what happened in Longford, but there should be no exceptions made for any community. It's not in anyone's culture or anyone's community right to break the law, and the law should be enforced.
All right, can we finish where we started then, that we can expect to see some addressing of the vulture funds, which you've described as undesirable, within weeks, to use your words?
That's right, but again, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Funds do have a role to play, but not in the way that they did in Maynooth or in my own constituency, Hollystown. We don't want to see any more of that.
Tánaiste, Leo Farrar, Fine Gael leader, of course.
My Minister apologies again for being so late.
Your apologies are accepted, Tánaiste. Thank you indeed. Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment as well. Okay, as we say, we've had to completely redraw our schedule, but we'll be going on our virtual history tour walk after that, thanks to the Tánaiste.
Know your county.
Oh, not for just for the moment, lads. Actually, I played that break, did I?
With Kildare County Council, kildare.ie or at Kildare Heritage.
All right. Again, there was more that I would have liked. There was more I would have liked to have asked the Tánaiste, as you'll understand. But given the way things turned out there, we had to apply stuff in regards to that. I'll tell you what I'll do then, because we're juggling matters here as we go around the place. We'll take our next break, and then we're going to be back with the virtual history tour of Punchestown with one Brian McCabe, which will take place in just about 2 minutes.
Know Your County, a virtual history walk.
In association with Kildare County Council, kildare.ie or at Kildare Heritage.
Okay, back with lots of your messages, including one which says, soft interview as always. Really, do you think so? Okay, you maybe like me to be rude or whatever else. In regards to that, let's take our virtual walk history tour around Johnstown with Brian McCabe. And as I said, if you're into pickled food or any time, you might want to listen closely, particularly to the last half minute of this. But anyway, let's begin our walk. Brian McCabe.
The best place to begin a tour of the village is probably in the old graveyard opposite the present-day Johnstown Inn. Here are the ruins of the old church from which the village actually takes its name. The church, dating from the Middle Ages, was a church belonging to the Knights Hospitallers of St. John of Jerusalem. The Knights Hospitallers were a companion order to the more famous or infamous Order of the Knights Templar. Both of the orders were introduced into Ireland by the Normans in the 12th century. The Hospitallers were originally set up to care for sick pilgrims to the Holy Lands, but they gradually became a military order whose role was to protect and safeguard the pilgrim routes to Jerusalem. Their headquarters in Ireland was in Kilmainham, where the RHK is now, and they had a series of regional centres called commanderies around the country. There was one here at Kilteel, and the church at Johnstown was an outlying church of that commandery. So the village here probably would have grown up between the church and the river. The family associated with this area in the Middle Ages were called the Flatsburys. They were the lords of the manor, seneschals and sheriffs of Kildare. There's a very old grave slab set into the wall of the church here, which has two carved coats of arms, those of the Flatsbury and the Wogan families. The stone has been dated to sometime around the 1430s. There was a marriage between the two families at that time. The most famous member of the family was Philip Flatsbury. He was the official chronicler and scribe to the Fitzgeralds, Earls of Kildare. He wrote a history of Ireland for them, dating from the Norman invasion. And he also drew up a book of all their holdings and rents and so on. It became known as the Red Book of Kildare. This book disappeared after Silken Thomas's rebellion. It was probably smuggled out of the country with the infant 12th Earl. It reappeared again back in Ireland in later centuries, and it's actually now held in the library of Trinity College in Dublin. Leaving the graveyard, we turn left, proceed down the village. After passing three new houses, the two-storey building on the left was originally an old police station. It's described in the Griffiths valuations of the 1850s as a constabulary force barracks, offices and yard. Next, we come to a row of six old cottages with church-type windows in the Gothic Revival style of architecture. This is probably what people know best about Johnstown, these old cottages. Built probably in about the 1830s, most likely by the 4th Earl of Mayo, who was based at Palmerstown House nearby. And they were probably built for four men on the Palmerstown estate. They're specifically mentioned in a book by the famous English writer, William Makepeace Thackeray. He was the author of the famous novel, Vanity Fair. And he wrote a book in 1842 describing his travels in Ireland, and he mentions these cottages there. Beyond the cottages, the road runs round to the left. Here stood one of Johnstown's two mills in the 1700s. It was operated by a Reynolds family, and a member of that family, Michael Reynolds, was to become famous as the local leader in this area of the rebellion of 1798. He led the rebels in their doomed attack on the old jail in Naas, which was where the town hall now stands. The rebels were beaten off with heavy losses. Today, Michael is commemorated in a plaque in Irish above the entrance to the town hall there. The mill owned by the Reynolds family no longer stands in Johnstown, but the building did stand here along this road in the 1920s, in which dances and other community events took place. And during a skirmish here during the Civil War, a Free State officer, Lieutenant John Joe, was shot and killed by anti-treaty Republicans in December 1922. And for a time there was a cross along the bank of the river there commemorating him. Continuing on down the village, we come to the modern Centra store. But before that was built, a wall ran along here, and inside it you could still see the track of the old mill race leading to Johnstown's other mill. This is the next big building on our left, after Lawler's house. This mill was originally owned by the Latin family of Morristown Latin, but it later passed to a family called Rhodes, and they gave their name to the nearby Roseborough House. William Rose was involved in the textile business in a big way in the 1700s. Today, the mill building here is occupied by a number of modern businesses, but in more recent times, it perhaps appropriately housed a business known as Craftspun Yarns. If you continue along the road now towards Naas, you'll see a field on your left in which there's a very striking standing stone. It has a circular hole up at the top, and it's been discovered in recent years that it's actually astronomically aligned to sunset on Midsummer's Day. So it's our own little mini Newgrange, you could say. It's now a protected structure. Here we'll turn now and proceed up the other side of the village. On our left, where Discount Tiles is now, was the original site of the Johnstown Garden Centre, the other thing for which Johnstown's probably most famous these days. The centre started off here on this little bit of land, which was left over after the Naas dual carriage was built in the 1960s. As we crossed the river, you could have a look at the old stone bridge here. And on one of the stones in the bridge, there's an inscribed Ordnance Survey, or Crow's Foot mark, sometimes called. And this recorded that when the survey was done in 1837, this spot was 283 feet above sea level. Continuing on, the old stone wall curves into a large pair of piers into what's now a car park. But originally, these piers were at the entrance to Cardiffstown House. Cardiffstown is named after the Cardiff or Cardiff family, who were another of the Welsh Norman families that got large estates of land in this part of Kildare in the 1200s and 1300s. The next set of houses on our left are all recorded on the original Ordnance Survey map of 1837. The one with the high arched entrance was originally the village forge. As we proceed up the street, the next large three-storey building was the original Johnstown Inn. We know that there's been an inn in Johnstown since at least the 1640s, because we have a written account during the Cromwellian Wars of the parliamentary forces sallying out from Dublin, but they record that they didn't proceed any further than the inn at Johnstown. Maybe they stopped off for a few tankers of ale. The lower building beside it, where the modern Johnstown Inn is, originally was the stables for the original Johnstown Inn. And it was one of the spots along the main road where you could change your horses. They had these stagecoach inns all along the road from Dublin to Cork and Limerick. The road then ran through the village. Some of our older listeners might recall this building when it was set up originally as the Oast of John Devoy. It was set up by an Irish language enthusiast in Gale Inn in the 1960s. The next building up from that, rather ornate building, was in the 19th century a free school operated by Lady Mayo for the children of workers on the Palmerstown estate. I've discovered that it was also used occasionally for Church of Ireland services. So if you turn now and look across the street, you will see another rather unusual house at two levels. This was originally the house lived in by Lord Mayo's land agents. During the First World War, it was lived in by a Major Blacker and his wife, and their only son, a Captain Cecil Blacker was killed in the early days of the war at the Battle of Mons. His mother was distraught at this. It said that afterwards she became obsessed with trying to contact her dead son, and she started dabbling in the occult and holding seances in the house and using the maid they had there as a medium. And this had very unfortunate repercussions for the maid later on. This whole episode is said to be the basis for a famous Irish play, The Righteous Are Bold, which was written in the 1940s. On the subject of demonic possession. We're now back where we started, outside the old graveyard, and if you look in through the arch, you can see a large Celtic cross in the centre of the church ruins. This marks the grave of Richard Southwell Burke, the 6th Earl of Mayo, and probably the most famous member of that particular family. Like all his family, he was part of the British ascendancy, and he represented Kildare in the Westminster Parliament. At a young age, he was appointed Chief Secretary for Ireland. In 1870, Richard was given an even higher political appointment as Governor-General or Viceroy of India. After just 2 years in that job, he was assassinated by an Indian rebel and was brought back to Ireland for burial. On the long trip home by ship, his body was preserved by immersing it in a barrel of rum. That was the usual custom at the time, what they did with Nelson and all the other people who died at sea or far away. All the great and good turned out for the reception of the Earl's body in Dublin, and they followed his coffin down to Johnstown, where he was buried with full pomp and ceremony. But the locals had the last laugh, because village tradition holds that some of the local guys managed to get hold of the discarded barrel of rum and proceeded to get stuck into the contents. One local wag that night is supposed to have raised his glass and proposed a toast to the pickled Earl. And that's how he's been remembered in the village ever since.
Know Your County, a virtual history walk.
In association with Kildare County Council, kildare.ie or at Kildare Heritage.
Oh, marvellous, Brian McCabe. I will never, ever, ever again be able to look at pickled food of any sort, having heard what the boys up in Johnstown did with the barrel of ale in which the pickled are the ouches. The thought. Wonderful. Well done, Brian McCabe. Super. Never knew there was so much history around Johnstown or the other areas. So we've 1 week left in the series now, folks, and we'll be going to Mary Coyle for a virtual history walk around Kill next Tuesday. And then today week, we'll have our final one in the series when Liam Kenny once again takes us on a virtual history tour of Maynooth. Coming up after the break, some of your messages and our weekly COVID quiz.
Clem Ryan, Kildare's KFM.
OK, you're very welcome back. Today is Alzheimer's Tea Day, and the theme is Tea in Every Town with the byline, please join us for a cup of tea to remember. And I'm happy after all the quarantine of months and months, our outside broadcast unit is back on the road. And what better way to do it than to mark Alzheimer's Day, where Pat Costello and the unit are at Craddock House. And between 11 and 2, well, between 11 maybe and about 12:15, we'll be bringing you all the flavour and atmosphere of tea morning for Alzheimer's Day at Craddock House. And Pat can set the scene for us. Welcome back, Mr. Costello.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine.
Ah, there you miss me. I knew you'd miss me.
I think I had some of that rum that Brian was talking about. But
no, I will never have pickled food again, because all I'll be able to think of is your man coming back in the barrel from India and then the lads having the heading off to the inn across the road. All right, OK. Anyway, Pat, it's Alzheimer's Tea Morning at Craddock House.
Yeah, it is indeed, and the residents and the staff are in there now at the moment getting ready for their 10 o'clock appointment. It's like the Queen coming here. They're all getting ready, they have their finery on, and they're going to have their tea in aid of Alzheimer's Tea Day, and tea in every town, and a cup of tea to remember. What was the one in Father Ted used to say, ah, go on, go on, go on? I think that's what I feel like this morning, Clem, because we're going to have a cup of tea, they're going to have their party, we're going to dip in and out, we're going to have plenty of requests. Some of them have been sent in directly to John, and between, I suppose, 11 o'clock and... 12:15, as you say, we're going to have requests, plenty of talk, and maybe a chat or two with the residents. It's a beautiful morning here. The kids are out playing out across the way, and maybe the residents are playing inside as well.
Lovely, Pat. Well done on that. And of course, Pat will be making his way around various areas of Naas after he leaves Craddock House. So look out for the KFM OB unit. Give him a wave. And regarding, by the way, from 11 to about 12:15 or thereabouts, don't forget, if you have anyone that you know in Craddock House and you'd like to send them your COVID requests, please send them. Get well, and we'll be taking requests from the residents as well. Well done, Pat, who'll be out and about your town. We're coming to your town over the next couple of months now that restrictions are loosening up.
The COVID quiz, the week that was on Kildare's KFM.
I have a lovely one for you, lads. I have a lovely. Welcome back, Kira. Kira Nolan, Kira Dial, Kira, whoever you are, Kira Noble. Well done, Kira, over at the live launch of the Garda Mobility app this morning. Hello, are you there? Where's she gone? Oh, she's only running in now. Ah, it's says all right, sure. Leo goes missing.
We're used to it at this stage.
Kira honest. Plunkett turns out the lights.
Clem, I've been
another
here.
Clown
I don't think
said
you had
they're
my
not
mic
available.
Up.
And now your one is coming late.
Clem, I don't think you had my mic up.
And then your one. Oh, yeah, go on. You chancer you. Anyway,
I was here. Hello.
Anyway, well done. You were very good. Now, we better move on, lads, because we have a few minutes. So with the quiz, I'm going to start with you, Kira. And I want you to tell me the name of the Kilcullen-born scientist who was a co-developer of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine and who was interviewed on the Kildare Today programme.
Oh.
Dum-de-dum-dum.
Okay, her name... Owen got the answer to it.
I'll give you a hint, because Owen would know it because she was scheduled, so I'm not going to pass it over. What's the hint?
A sheep.
Go on.
Oh, God.
Young sheep?
A lamb. Oh, Professor Lambert, her first name was it Kathleen?
No. Kathleen Lambert.
No, it was Professor Teresa Lamb. I'll give you that. Okay, Kira.
What do you mean?
No, don't give it to you.
No, I've given it to Kira because she's nice. And she's very obliging, not like you, Owen.
Yeah. No, you were nearly there with Kathleen Lambert. Fair play to you.
Right.
Thanks,
well, Owen. Give it to you.
Owen, what do vaccines actually do?
They protect us against the virus.
I know. What do they do? How
That's
do they
what
operate?
They do.
No.
Well, it depends. If it's an mRNA vaccine, it will... if it's not an mRNA, go with the other one.
Right, no.
Some of the virus is injected into the body, and that will then build up immunity against the virus.
So while you were waffling there, you went on to Google on your smartphone.
You did,
and
Owen,
you got the answer,
lie.
Owen.
I did not.
It stimulates your immune system, right, to respond
on, hold
to
on, Kira.
Now, if she gets Kathleen Lambert, and I don't get something along the lines of it protects you against the virus and it builds up immunity.
Okay, all right, we'll give it to you. It's one all.
Tell us about mRNA, though.
Kira,
you're
about
to say that.
Here, I've 3 minutes left. Come on. Kira, what is the main travel change taking place from May 10th, next Monday?
In Ireland?
Yeah.
That you can inter-county travel is
correct.
Acceptable.
Owen, what difference will there be regarding gatherings from May 10th?
You can have 3 households meeting up, and you can meet up in gardens, mainly outdoors.
You can indeed, that's perfect. The limit of 6 people does not apply to, or 6 people from different households, but it doesn't apply to children under 12. Right, 2 each. Kira, how many can attend a wedding from May 10th?
25?
No.
50.
Passing up, but I have to take your first answer, sorry.
15. Take my second answer.
No,
don't give me lamb.
I won't, and I'm not passing it over. It's 50 for a religious service, and a maximum of 6 for an indoors wedding reception, 15 for the outdoor celebration. No, I'm not passing over that. Owen, what is meant by the term vaccine bonus?
It's all vaccines here for me.
Yeah.
Vaccine bonus.
Yeah. Come on, you don't have to repeat the question.
Is it the people who are considered like vaccinated before their second dose or something? Like
no, I know the answer. Teacher, I know the answer.
Okay, over to the pupil, Kira.
So, would say if 2 people are fully vaccinated, their vaccine bonus would be they can meet indoors without a mask?
Correct. Correct. Yeah, and you were Googling as well.
Over my mother's life, I know that because my grandmother is fully vaccinated and I told her that about
your
her
mother,
sister.
Leave your mother out of this, will you?
It's all getting very morbid here.
Yeah, your mother. that was passed to you, Kira, so you get the next question as well.
Yeah, go on.
When are those who received AstraZeneca vaccine and who do not have a very high risk of severe COVID disease recommended to have their second AstraZeneca dose?
Well, I got this wrong. I said 12 the other week, but it's 16 weeks, right?
Correct. Kira's right again. I think, Kira, you're going to win again this week.
You can't give me Catherine Lambert. Even I can say you can't give me Catherine Lambert.
But you just gave her, like, she just said that she answered that question a couple of weeks ago, so you just gave her the same question.
I'm taking off Catherine Lambert, so she got too many hints there.
Right.
Owen, when will all retail outlets be allowed to open?
May 24th?
No.
27th?
No. And that's two tries you've had. Kira?
June 7th.
No. It's May 17th. No one gets that. Kira, name two of the four countries added to Ireland's quarantine list this week.
Mongolia.
Yeah.
And... Oh.
3 seconds.
North and south of Mongolia?
No. Owen?
India.
India. Another one?
Mongolia.
Correct. Owen, you got that one. I can't believe, Kira Noble, that you didn't remember India. Right.
Sorry. How could you give him that?
Right, last question.
We get a half a point each.
It's 11 o'clock, I got the news. No, you're not getting half a point. Last question, Owen. Many sports are resuming training and in some cases matches, with challenge matches permitted. Golf reopened last week, but unlike every other sport, what restriction remains on golf, in golf?
What restriction?
Unlike any other sport.
Oh, God.
Courses opened last week.
I wouldn't mind, but I've played golf in the last week.
Right. Kira?
And I don't know what restriction.
I'm passing it over.
The restriction is that they cannot be inside... No, I'm not. They cannot be inside the clubhouse?
No.
Okay. I don't know.
Competitions are not allowed. So 1-1. Kira has 1-2. Ah, it's a draw this week.
It was a draw last week as well, but you just gave Kira the win.
All right. Goodbye, the two of you. Well done. It's a draw anyway on our weekly COVID quiz, which is, by way of information, a bit of fun, but also to keep you informed about what we all need to know. Listen, thanks for your company. The disruption was marvellous all morning, including Kira Plunkett leaving me in the dark, turning out the lights and other things. But we got there. Thanks to Owen Beattie, producer, and Kira Noble, and yourselves. John Dunn is back in studio for the first time in about 6 months after this. And don't forget, we're live from Craddock House Nursing Home on World Alzheimer Tea Day. All of that to come. Take care of yourselves and stay safe. In the newsroom with the lights on is Kira Plunkett.